petition number 22128, Bill 1.
Bill Wilkinson, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Born in Hull.
Which year was this?
1920.
Did both your mother and father come from Hull?
Yes.
And whereabouts did you live in Hull?
I was born in Woodcock Street.
Where's that?
On Hesle Road.
Is that where you grew up and had your school?
No, I left there when I was about a year old. And we moved to a shop in Grimston Street with a funny address. It was 11 and a half. We was at the corner of Sylvester Street, and the house entrance was 53 Sylvester Street. So we had two addresses.
Is this at George Street?
It's off George Street, where the old Criterion and Majestic used to be, just before you got to the fire station.
Which school did you go to then?
Chadhouse Lane, and then to Brunswick Avenue when I was 11.
What was schooling like in those days at Chadhouse Lane?
Well, it was very good, I thought. It was a good year if we didn't get at least 2 cents to Boston, though.
Is that true? Did you know of anybody who was sent to Boston?
Well, I knew quite a few. It was a good year if we... More than two.
What were they sent to Borstal for?
Petty theft sort of thing.
Was it like nowadays?
I have no idea. It's all been bombed out and changed down there now.
I mean, was there crime like it was, like the crime?
No. I mean, there was no burglary among working men as such, really. There was the odd sneak thief who'd sneak in if a door was open. But you could leave your house reasonably without being locked up.
So why were these...
There was always a sneak thief about who'd take advantage, right? But very few and far between.
So why were these boys sent to Borstal then?
Well, for stealing sweets and whatnot, you know. And repeated offences. I mean, it wasn't like it is now, right? They can go and kill somebody and they got their wrist slapped.
How old were you when you left school?
When I left school, 15.
In 35?
I was working, I was at school at 9 o'clock and I was working at 10 o'clock the same day. I was one of the very first to go through a selection of apprentices schemes for the printing trade. And as a job arose as an apprentice, so I was top of the list, top two, was sent for interview at the firm. And I went for, I had to go to pass a medical with the doctors on Beverley Road, which is just opposite Brunswick Avenue. And I went to Archibald and Johnson's in Market Place.
Who were they?
Printers. After I had an interview, the managing director says, well, when can you start? Can you start now? I said, well, yes, if you ring up the school. Because that was one of the few schools that had a phone in those days, as far as I know. None of the ordinary schools had just a secondary school. And he rang up the school, so I started work at 10 o'clock. After reporting at school at 9 o'clock.
So you started there and then?
Started there and then.
What type of work were you doing?
A ruler's apprentice then. Well, after a year I changed over to a lithographic apprentice.
And were you, did you stay in printing or did you have any periods of unemployment?
Oh no, just printing till I was called up in the war.
With the same firm?
Yes. Oh, you had 7 year apprenticeship in those days. You were indentured for 7 years.
What was life like in Hull before the war started?
Well, it was a bit dead compared to what the centre of the town life is now. mean, all cinemas closed by about 10 o'clock. Pubs closed at 10 o'clock. And being the end of the line and miles away from any other big town or city, we sort of be left out, like.
Did you join any services organisation before the war started?
Yeah, I've joined the RNBR.
Can you tell me about joining that, please? No, don't bother about the book, just do it from memory.
Well, there was an advertisement in the whole paper asking for volunteers for the RNBR. I think it was between 18 and 30, I think, something like that. And I wrote, and my brother wrote, three of my pals wrote. One of them, actually, his father had done 27 years in the Navy, and he'd tried to get in. But he was colourblind in one eye and couldn't get in. So he thought he might get in the RNBR. Anyhow, we got four of us joined, so my brother joined. And I waited months and months and never heard anything, so my brother, he joined the Territorials instead. And out of the four of us who joined, the first two of us called up, well, there only was two of us called up, anyway, because the war broke out before they rested. One of them, he drilled Tuesdays and Thursdays, I think, and I drilled Wednesdays and Fridays, so they split us up from the start, like.
What had given you the idea of joining RNVR?
This pal of ours, whose father had 27 years in the Navy. four of us sent in applications, right?
Do you know when you joined, approximately? Doesn't matter about the exact date, I mean, roughly.
I think it's somewhere about June, I'm not sure.
39?
39, oh yes, it's... We're all in 39.
What did you do in the RNVR once they accepted you?
Well, we started off doing drill. That was the first thing, right?
Where did you do that?
In Trinity House Yard, in the old town there. And later on, we got HMS Calcutta here. Well, that was only here, about a month, I should say, when the war broke out. And,
did you go aboard the ship?
Yeah, we did. I think we did about two drills aboard there, actually. And then we were actually called up on the Sunday before, the week before, the Saturday, the Sunday before, to report on the Monday at HMS Calcutta. And we were all issued with our uniforms and what have you. Then we had to report at Paragon Station at 8, 9 o'clock on the Wednesday morning to go down to Chatham.
By then, had you had any training apart from drilling?
A few little bits of seamanship, knots and things like that. So we'd had no gunnery training, anything like that. But when we were called up, we were called up for a fortnight's gunnery training or the duration of war. And then we did our gunnery training in Chatham, such as it was. But all it was really was big guns, you know. We were due to sign on two anti-aircraft cruisers, same class as the Calcutta, as guns crews. And we did drill on 4-inch anti-aircraft guns.
What did that involve?
Well, learning the proper procedure in case of misfires, what positions you could take at the gun. You did every position, kept rotating, like. And how it was all controlled. We sort of did it in a queer way. They split us up into different groups, and we was the first lot to do the actual gunnery drill. Some of them went to gunnery control, someone went to what was coming to the transmitting station. And you did all these different parts. Well, when we first went, it didn't make any sense to us after the instructions we got, like. See, they was giving you instructions, but if you'd have gone, as you normally would in peacetime, started at gunnery control, and you knew what was going to happen with the guns then. But one thing I do remember, and it was a little thing. It was on the what they call the BM lever, that's the breech mechanism lever, and it was a little thing to trip it. And they called it the catch releasing, latch retaining BM lever housed. And something stuck in my mind, like it was only a little trigger like that, more like a rifle trigger it was, you know. It really stuck in my mind in that.
Any other memories from that time?
Yeah. After we did our fortnight's training, didn't know what to do with us, so they sent us home for a week's leave. When we came back, they still didn't know what to do with us, because the Curacao, which Anson crowd went to, and Benbow, which Carlisle crowd went to, they weren't ready for commissioning until January. So we used to get all kinds of odd jobs, and I always seemed to catch the job in the gunnery school. And the big thing there was what was called ronocking the floors. You'd make a big stick with a big block of wood on it, and that was covered with old carpet, the block of wood. And you put ronock, which was a varnish, floor polish on the floor, and push this thing up and come backwards and forwards, right? And when you've been doing that 2 or 3 weeks, 4 or 5 hours a day, you got a bit fed up of it.
So did you not like being in barracks?
Well, we all wanted to get to sea in them days, like, you know. It seemed quite a waste as being there when we could have been at sea. I mean, they was crying out for people at sea. I know one job I got at weekend was to evacuate. It was Rochester Hospital, I think. They were sending them across to somewhere on the west coast, away from what they thought might be the bombing. We had to go to this hospital about 8 o'clock in the morning and load all the patients that wanted to be loaded on to our stretchers and then into ambulances, like. Well, there was one chap, he was running about helping all the nurses to do this, do that and do the other. When we got there, he calmly laid down on his stretcher and wanted carried out. Funnily enough, he was tipped off halfway down the stairs, like, you know. We'd go down quite a bit of a staircase. I mean, that's something that stuck in my mind.
Then what happened?
What, after we evacuated them? Oh, back to Monarchin, the gunner's seat floor. Well, the one thing I found out, a bit late actually, before we slept, I found out there was a whist drive. I think every Monday night, I think. So I goes along to this whist drive, I like cards. And the first time, I got fed first. There was very few men's in it. And somebody had to play as a lady, you get me, you know. Say, you and I play, and well, I'll play as a lady, you play as a gentleman. Because in the whist drive, the winning gentleman moves up and the losing lady moves down, sort of thing. You're changing tables every time, right? Anyhow, if I'd have been playing as a lady with my score, I'd have got third prize. So the next time I went, I played as a lady. And I got third prize, only 10 bob, right? But I'm going to tell you, when you was on, I mean, I allotted 7 shillings of my money home, so when you got seven shilling wages and you won 10 bob, it was every week's pay. I went the next week and I got the second prize as a lady.
Third
week, 15 bob. Third week, I won it, a pound. Like. It all came out of the canteen funds, you see. After that, I Carlisle was ready, so I didn't play anymore. Well, 3 weeks, I went up a step every week, like it. I thought it was quite good. Only thing is, I wished I'd found out about it a lot earlier, because we've been in there. Well, So we went to Chatham on the Wednesday, as war was declared on the 3rd of September, so we've been in there about 4 or 5 months, haven't we, before January when we commissioned Carlisle.
Can you tell me about going to Carlisle, please?
Well, we went from Chatham to London and London to Plymouth. That's when we got there. We were still a bit strange to ships, like, but we settled down. There was, as you say, 90% of the seamen had never been to sea before on Carlisle. Though either, like us, RNBR, or these, what they're called, hostilities only. These are the people that had been called up, you know, through the war, or they started that conscription, about 1938, would it be? 37, 38. And there were people who were doing the 6 months conscription time.
What impression did the ship make on you?
Well, I thought it was very good, except it was a bit tight for space, like. I mean, it was about 450 in the ship's company, I think. It was about 12 or more in the mess. The mess tables run port ships, you know, from the side to midships. And it was about 6 each side. So, usually about 2 tables. Of course, the further you went forward, the shorter the tables got. And I was in one of the messes right forward, and I know we had 2 tables, but they'd only seat about 4 aside, right?
What kind of duties did you have in the ship at first?
Well, just ordinary seaman's duties, keeping the ship clean and gunnery training.
Did you have an action station?
Yes, I was on number one gun action station all the time. I was a trainer on the gun.
How big was number one gun?
What kind? It was 24-inch. They were all 24-inch. That was our main armament. We had pom-poms, with 4-barrel pom-pom. What would have been B gun or number two gun prior, like, when it was a ordinary surface cruiser, because these had been converted. They'd been built in the 1418 war and been converted to ACAT cruisers.
Did you stay in Devonport very long?
No. No, it was all ready when we got there for sea, so we did our sea trials and went back to, you're on the outer day, like, doing speed trials, turning trials, checking things. We was back. I think we were only there 3 or 4 days, if I remember right. And then we went out to the Mediterranean to work up. But any ship that just commissions, they give them so long to everybody to get used to what they're supposed to do. And they called it working up, like. And we went out to Malta to work up. And it was quite a good time there, because it was before Italy came in the war.
Any experiences you had at that time in the Med?
Well, we had quite a few firing exercises, firing at queen bees, firing at surface targets, where a target would be towed by another tug, you know, towed on a long line about 600, 700 yards behind, and we used to fire at the target, mate. And we had queen bees, we had aircraft throwing a drog, which you fired at the drog, right? But all your firing was done with a reduced charge in the shell. It was just a gunpowder shell, and all it gave you was a, when it exploded, just give you a cloud of black smoke, like, you know, it wouldn't do any real harm.
Did you go ashore much in the Med?
I went ashore quite a lot in Malta. It was any place we called. Well, we called it Jib on the way out, like, and on the way back. But
I was
ashore quite a few times in Malta. They used to call it the Matlow's Paradise. A bottle of blue, which was half a bottle of beer, was fourpence in those days.
Bottle of blue?
Blue, aye. That was what it was. They always called it a bottle of blue. It's half a pint of beer, but it was local blue, like, but it was a bottle of blue. I mean, in Alexandria, it was always onion beer, they called it, because it tasted of onion. You know, Matt Wells had been on them for everything, right? But, Matt's first time, apart from the Ned, I'd never played tombola. There was a big pub, I suppose it was, what we'd call a big pub there, and they played tombola on a Sunday night, and it was for about £100 a house. Which, it was the only gambling game allowed in the Navy, was tombola. They're what they call housey-housey now, or bingo, you know. And officially, you had played 7 games a night, you was allowed to play. First 6 were for threepence a ticket, and the last house could be for 6 pence a ticket. And I think you weren't allowed to spend more than that. 2 shillings, I think, that wouldn't it worked out at. You weren't allowed to spend more than 2 shillings a night. And you was only allowed to play, either 2 or 3 nights a week. I think it was 2 nights a week.
Did you go in for it much?
Oh, yeah, everybody played it every night. If you want to show, you always played it. I mean, later on a destroyer, you very often tied up 2 or 3 destroyers, one alongside the other. So we'd say to the next door ship, when you're playing tombola, they'd say, well, we're playing tonight. All right, then we'll play tomorrow night. They used to work it like that. You could play nearly every night, those 3 of you alongside. Which you very often were, like. And if you was up scabber below, there was a depot ship, they used to go alongside the depot ship and play on their tombola, you know.
Was this a happy ship for you?
Carlisle, oh yeah, yeah, very happy ship. We all had a real good crowd in our R&B house, and we'd a real good crowd. I think we'd a better crowd. Well, we always said we were a better crowd than Anson, like, because.
What do you mean by Anson?
Well, it was all in divisions. See, the first, I think about 56, was Anson Division. It was like this right throughout the Navy. The second 56 was Benbow Division, which we were in. Then the third, well, it began with a C anyhow.
Collingwood?
Collingwood, yeah. And the fourth was Drake. And then they stopped recruiting at that because the war broke out. So that's all there was, like. If you were.
Don't worry about that. These were divisions of the Hull RNVR, you mean?
No, these were the divisions you were put in. Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah. Hull RNVR, yeah. I'm getting myself mixed up now because the. In Chatham, all the blocks were named after admirals. All the accommodation blocks were named after admirals. Yes, it didn't mean a thing, that. It's just a name for the block, right, for the address.
So, you're in the Mediterranean working up. Mm-hmm. What are your next memories?
Coming back to Plymouth. And they'd found out there was such a thing as a magnetic mine. So they had some work to do on the ship, so we all got a bit of leave. I can't remember how much. The only time you got leave during the war was if the ship was out of action. And when we come back, there was a load of wire right round the ship, round the deck. It was in a hose pipe, you know, sort of fireman's hose pipe, and it was what they called degaussing gear. And that was supposed to protect you against electro mines, magnetic mines. And when we got back and in action again, was off up to Scapa, I think we went. And we boarded a load of Chasseurs Alpins, supposed to be French crack troops, and a lot of stores, and took them across to Norway, because Italy had invaded Norway then.
What impression did these French troops make?
Well, I didn't see anything of them, really, to tell you the truth. We were too busy, and they were getting all the stores aboard, and whatever, whether it did any good or not, when we arrived in Norway, I don't know. But we anchored a cut, well, we had two wires out of stand to a tree on the far bank of the fjord, and two anchors down, so that we was laid afloat across the fjord. We had an admiral aboard, rear admiral, who was flagship, a vice admiral, whatever he was. And of course, when we were attacked, it was to give us a line of fire up and down the fjord, which was the way the planes had come in. We had quite a few near misses. And then we went back to, I think we were there about 3 days. We went back to Scapa to pick up more stuff. When we got back to Scapa, the admiral left us and he said, sorry, he said, but we had to anchor across the fjord like that so that they'd bomb us and not the jetty. Well, very good of him, like.
Whereabouts in Norway was it?
Handelsnes, that one. Then we picked up a load more stores and went to a place called Namsos. That was another, down another big fjord.
Did the same thing happen there?
Well, we couldn't get alongside the jetty at Namsos, so we had to offload all our stuff onto, I think it was a frigate. No, but we'd been up all night in Scapa loading it, like, and then there was about 24 hours across to Norway. We unloaded it all, then we had to go up. We went up in the Arctic Circle to a tanker to oil. When we come back, there was a raid going on and we was firing at the planes. We could see them, but the Namsos people couldn't see us, like. And apparently we shot one down, and we claimed one anyhow. And I claimed it was our gun because it was ahead of us and we was the only one that had fired ahead, number one gun. So, when we got back, well, there's the bitten or not the ship had put out, it had been sunk with all our good work on it. So we'd laboured in vain there. But, I mean, a lot of this is just hearsay, we haven't got the proof for it, mate. Well, that's what we said when we got back.
Was it frightening for you in the operations at Handelsnes and Namsos?
No, you didn't have time to be frightened. It was either you or them, like, sort of thing. We did suffer one or two casualties.
Was the ship damaged?
Shrapnel damage. But I think there was a marine killed. One of our lads, Ted Camplin, a bullet went through his, just tipped his tin hat with the old-fashioned first war tin hats, like with a big brim. It just nicked that, nipped his lips, went down. And 5 minutes after, sort of thing, a bit of shrapnel hit him in the arm. And it just fell down his coat sleeve and into his glove because it was all, it was muffled up like, it was April, wasn't it? I think it was April of May. It was quite cold at times. That.
Did you know this chap?
Yeah, quite a nice lad, Ted. He's the only one I thought deserved a medal out of that lot. And he got the DSM. There was one or two, but there was no more entitled to him anybody. I thought he had the guts when he got beaten, two near misses, like, and he went back to action. But a lot of it's purely, well, I think recruiting drive sort of thing, you know.
You mean the issue of medals?
Yeah.
Any other medals from that time?
Yeah. Sam Bearwell got one because he was captain of our gun. That's all. And I mean, that was purely when we did our gun drill, where you sort of finished up on your last day gun drill, that was your position on the gun. And for some reason, the number two, which is the breech worker on the right, was captain of the gun. And So Sam was captain of the gun, so he got the medal. I don't think he deserves it any more than anybody else, actually. And I'd be afraid if they hadn't given any. But later on, when I was on Penn, after that Malta convoy, I named everybody who'd get medals. And I was right, everyone I named. There was some more as well, but everyone I named got medals.
We'll come back to that ship later on.
Yeah.
Anything else you remember from Norway?
Only coming back to school.